I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series called Talking Books, I shall be asking my guests about their personal relationship with the written word. My guest today is Petra Bianchi. I'm delighted to have her on the programme. This is the first interview in this new series of Talking Books. And before we go on to discover which book Dr. Bianchi has chosen for this occasion, I'll just say a few words about her. She was born in St. Julian's, Malta in 1968. She's young enough for us to mention that. She holds a doctorate in English literature from the University of Oxford and mainly writes about cultural and historical subjects linked with the Maltese Islands. Dr. Bianchi is vice president of Dean Laureate Helwa, Malta's National Trust, and she's a member of the Valletta Mdina Cotonera Rehabilitation Committee and of the Malta Council for the Voluntary Sector. She's also a visiting lecturer at the University of Malta, where she lectures in 19th century English poetry and fiction, pre-Raphaelite painting and poetry, and British travel writing. In January of this year, she was appointed director of the British Council here in Malta. And she's also author of a novel entitled Family Photos, which was published only last year. Welcome to the programme, Petra. And I can call you Petra because we've been friends for a long time. Thank you very much for agreeing to participate in this programme today. From the short biography that I've just mentioned, it's clear that books have been an important part of your adult life, your scholarly life. But casting your mind back to your childhood, where did the written word sort of fit in to your early life?
Well, I was always a keen reader, you could say. From when I was a child, I used to buy books with my pocket money. I was lucky to be in a household which was filled with books and had parents who also encouraged me to read and enjoyed reading themselves. So really it's just been a very integral part of my whole life from very early years. Then obviously I carried on through secondary school, taking English literature quite seriously. I quite enjoyed it, and went on to university to do first a BA, then an MA, then a doctorate and so on. Going through all that, I think the thing that gave me energy to study that far in literature was the fact that I really enjoy not only reading the books, but also thinking about them, finding out more about authors, comparing books and so on. Obviously the kind of things that you do when you study literature, you know, at university and so on. So that's always been a big stimulus for me, just the pleasure of it.
Do you like also the physicality of the book?
Yes, books become, I mean, when you have many books in your home, they become part of the household. I mean, my house is filled with books in all rooms, and I have various books in, you know, which I'm reading in different rooms, if you like. I have books I'm reading downstairs, books I'm reading upstairs, and so on, and I've always been one to dip in and out of books. I've now come into the habit, after years of reading, where I'm reading many books at the same time, and I might read a chapter and abandon it and go back to the book months later and pick it up again, read the same thing, it depends. But I've always got quite a few sort of on different burners, if you like. So yes, the books in themselves, the physical objects, are also very much part of the house.
And then when you go back to the book, do you manage to remember what the story was about?
Well, I often have to refresh my memory. But I mean, if it's an enjoyable writer, I mean, some books you need to read right through because they're very plot driven, and if you don't just carry on, you lose the momentum, if you like. But there are other books which you can just pick up, dip into, put down, read the same thing, carry on. Obviously you need to refresh your memory on what's going on, so I think that's the way I read.
So you're a sort of omnivore when it comes to books.
Yes, I like lots of different kinds
different
of books.
Different genres.
Different genres, yes, different mm-hmm. different kinds of writers.
So if I were to ask you whether you can remember over the years life-changing books, would that be not something that you really felt, you know, sort of, would you feel more that you've covered a lot of ground and they've all influenced
yes,
you in many ways?
Yes, with difficulty, because, yes, they have all influenced me in different ways. Obviously the very big writers, Proust and writers like this. I think anybody who's interested in reading and dips into these big writers would remember the experience. But in terms of life-changing books, no. I think it's just the whole experience of reading, which sort of combines into, you know, forming your own thoughts, your character as well.
And you've written many scholarly articles and collaborated with other people on books such as Encounters with Malta, which many of the listeners will have dipped into themselves. But you published your first novel only recently. Was this something that you had always wanted to do, or something that you wanted to do after reading for your doctorate, which I think was a study on a particular female author?
Yes, well, I, in my mind, separate, you know, the books that I studied for thesis and so on. In the end, that becomes a bit of a different, falls into a different category. But yes, I've always wanted to write, I think since I was quite young, and I used to obviously dabble in lots of little bits and pieces of writing which just stayed in the drawer, you know, very typically. But then last year I had managed to get a piece to a stage where I thought I could put it out for publication, although possibly I could have worked on it more and improved it. But you get to a point where you just say, now this is it, this is a complete whole, and out it goes. So last year I published that novel, and in the meantime I'm working on another one. It was great fun doing that one, and I'm enjoying doing this one as well. So,
and can you tell us a little bit about the storyline of your novel?
It's set in Malta, and it's partly set in Valletta in the 19th century, in the 1860s, where some Italian, really political exiles settled in Valletta, as there was quite a big community of that in those days. There are also Maltese characters, also British residents at the time. And these characters, you know, interact and sort of form their futures. And then the other part of the book is set in Slema, actually, in contemporary times. And this is the same family, but a couple of generations down the line. And the story really is, I mean, it's a loose narrative where the contemporary characters are suddenly now interested in these ancestors and realize that they don't really know very much about them, and try to find out a few things, not very successfully. In fact, at the end of the book, still very little is known by the contemporary characters about the 19th century characters. I think that's the way life often is. One often does know very little about two or three generations back. There are some families who have quite a lot of documentation and so on, I'd say, but most people don't, actually. So when you try and look back, you really have just a few fragments of people's lives who came before you. And the book reflects that, because you don't really find out, or let's say the contemporary characters don't really discover all that much in the end. And it's also about the changing, not only the changing family and how things are forgotten, but also the changing landscape. I mean, in particular, it focuses in particular on Slema, where, you know, although it's not such an old place, it's really not, begins in the 19th century. Already in just such a short space of time, it's been completely changed, so that not only the houses, but also the lifestyle, therefore, of the people who lived in those houses has been, obliterated in a lot of instances. So there's also this, how not only do families, you know, regenerate themselves and forget what was in the past, but also places change and forget what was there in the past. Sort of dwells on this kind of theme.
The Garibaldi period is a very exciting
period to
read about. Mm-hmm. I find it really, really interesting. We'll move on to the book that you've actually chosen as the sort of the main want to talk about today. And I suppose that when I asked you what book you'd like to talk about, perhaps it was a decision that you took because it happened to be a book that you read recently. What led you to choose Orhan Pamuk's Istanbul?
Yes, well, as I said, I find it difficult to choose, you know, specific favorite books, but Pamuk is an author that I've been reading quite a bit over the last, say, couple of years, not only this book, but also some of his other books. He's a very interesting writer, and I happen to have read this one quite recently, so I just picked this. He's won the Nobel Prize a couple of years ago for his works. He's written, I think, about six or seven novels, mostly set in Turkey and actually mostly in Istanbul, most of his works. And he's a writer who's very interested in the idea of home and place, because he repeats often also in interviews and essays and so on, how very important the idea of Istanbul and his home is to him. And he's compared himself to other writers, such as, for example, Nabokov or Conrad and so on, who have migrated and had their imagination nurtured by this type of encounter with other cultures and so on. Whereas in his case, his imagination is very much nurtured by being in one place and focusing on this one place. So this book is interesting because it's, whereas most of his other books focus on the sense of home and on Istanbul and its history in a fictional way, here he's actually writing now in his own voice about this very important place to him. So we get a description of his childhood and also his very, intense relationship with the city, described here. It's called Istanbul, Memories of a City as a subtitle. So it's a portrait in a way of himself as a young man, but also very much a portrait of the city itself and the very strong link, you know, how the city has shaped him as a writer.
It is also a portrait of a family as well.
Yes.
So there is definitely this family feeling. And in fact, I believe that his relationship with his family after the book actually went
deteriorated
downhill
so
fast.
So it seems, yes.
His brother seems never to have forgiven him for some of the things that he says in the book.
I'm not sure
him.
About the details, but this is something which I think is quite, well, it's not unknown among writers, where people who are around them feel perhaps invaded by, you know, representations of, perhaps of themselves which they recognize, or which may or may not actually be themselves, but this sort of feeling.
He admits in the book that we must be warned as readers that he does exaggerate, that he is an artist and
yes.
he does exaggerate. So he says, sort of, don't believe everything I say, but my perception of things is this, my brother's perception of things are slightly different. But
he does focus on the family, but really he's mostly focusing always on himself, I think, on himself and his very personal, quite self-absorbed relationship with his identity as a person who has been born and brought up and so on in that particular place. And he explores this in many different ways, actually, through the book.
One of the reviews that I read said, I'm finding it difficult to review because I can't imagine a building that has been purpose-built to hold various generations of people, as their apartment buildings used to be, sort of the grandmother
yes.
at one level, them at another, and various other cousins and extended family on the other. But I smiled when I read that, because, of course, for us in Malta, that does not seem at all
not
strange.
No, exactly. It's a different, perhaps the cultures are more similar. And there's another aspect of the book which I recognized. It sort of reminded me of a similarity where we mentioned earlier on that book that I had co-edited called Encounters with Malta, which really documents a lot of different chronicles, diaries and so on of visitors to Malta over the centuries and the way obviously that they viewed Malta. And altogether these short biographies build up a kind of history of Malta over the centuries, but always seen through foreign eyes. And in Istanbul, he also dwells quite a lot on this, where he talks about foreign writers and painters who have come to Istanbul over the ages and either painted it or written about it and so on, and how their view of the place has been such a strong influence in the way he sees the place and other people there, and this strange, rather ambivalent relationship between your own view of yourself and then this outside view, which is also influencing you and you have a relationship with, you either reject or approve of, or perhaps you want to please or impress or whatever it is. But it's quite a strange, I think everybody's interested always to know how other people view them, of course, but this reminded me very much of this where he has this specific interest in the accounts of visitors and the sketches, drawings and so on.
One of the things he says about that when he's talking about Théophile Gautier or any of the other travelers or painters who he describes, whose works he describes, he seems to anticipate a criticism of the reader. That why are you talking about Istanbul, the city that you love, through the eyes of these foreigners, really? And one of the things he says is that the serious scholars of Istanbul did not seem to talk about Istanbul in the way in which he would have liked to have talked about Istanbul, that the painters didn't paint it in the way.
Yes, because the traditions, if you like, of the West in terms of painting obviously are different to those which were going on in other parts of the world, including in Turkey. For example, he is particularly interested in a painter called Melling, who was early 19th century, I think, a German and French ancestry, who lived in Istanbul for quite a number of years and also painted Istanbul and eventually created all sorts of pictures anyway, and also line drawings and so on about Istanbul. And he's particularly interested in this painter partly because while he paints in the tradition of the West, in this sort of typical representational way, at the same time he lived in Istanbul for many, many years and therefore also had the eye of an insider. So he manages to combine both the eye of the insider with this other tradition in painting. And so he's particularly interested in that, so because there's this amalgamation of two. Because, I mean, I'm not an expert in Turkish painting, but according to Pamuk, the Turkish artists of the time simply weren't painting in that manner of the West. So this sort of representational views and bird's eye views over whether it's the Bosphorus or whatever were mainly created by foreigners who were visiting.
And he gives these lovely comparisons with, for example, Impressionist painters when he's describing the ferries on the Bosphorus, this piece of water that means so much to the Istanbulus. He likens it to the Venetian lagoon, the kind of contact that the Venetians have with the lagoon, that they consider it theirs. And he describes the smoke coming out of the funnels of the ferries that were known by their name, and their every detail of them was familiar to the local people. And he says the smoke curled like a Turner painting.
Yes, of course, he's very interested in painting, and himself, before he decided, as he does in the end of this book, to become a writer rather than a painter, had spent many years as a teenager and as a young adult as well, wanting to be a painter. And he actually, it seems, was quite talented also with his drawings and paintings, but decided to turn to writing instead and put one aside and devote himself to the other. But you can see that also in this book he's got a very visual imagination. He describes the city, for example, he's always trying to describe this kind of what he calls a specific, very Turkish type of melancholy. I mean, it's kind of he describes it as a feeling of almost a civilization which has, you know, the changes that happened in Istanbul over the years, where it's a city in decline, and he really dwells on this and enjoys. It's actually a melancholy which can be enjoyed and indulged in. It's almost like a feeling, it reminds me of a kind of feeling of nostalgia, where nostalgia in a way is something which is not positive, but at the same time you can indulge in and enjoy. And he describes the city, when he's thinking of this feeling of melancholy, in terms of black and white. Their colour is extracted and he's talking about it always in terms of black and white, and he also introduces black and white photos and so on. So wherever he's, I mean, of course the descriptions are very strong, but it's also very visual imagination, I think. A lot of his work is really strong in this creating a sense of place through this kind of through colour and so on. A lot of his books also mention colour in the title, as My Name is Red and The White Castle and so on. He has the black book. He's very interested in this aspect.
And throughout the book there are these illustrations that he likes very much. And even the way the book is designed, with these small pictures, it's more like a scrapbook.
It is, in a way, yes. And also of memories, because it's I mean, there is a narrative which runs through, because he does, of course, grow as the book progresses. But at the same time, as in many of his other books, the narrative isn't necessarily the strongest. It's not really plot-driven. Obviously, this is a memoir, but a lot of his other books strike me. That's why the kind of books I like to dip in and then leave and then back into, because you can do that. A lot of the strength is also in these sort of vignettes or little excursions, if you like, into smaller other stories or bits of memory or characters and so on, which you sort of leave the main plot, go into some other article, some other place, and then return later. So the, if you like, scrapbook, I don't know if that's quite the word, but it's definitely made up of different bits of different instances which all weave together to create this whole in the end, but not necessarily, you know, tightly driven by a plot.
He does this with the chapters themselves, like
yes.
You know, he picks out Flaubert, for example, and mm-hmm. he does a little chapter on
yes, they're quite loose, sort of baggy type of writing, where, you know, you can just indulge, and also in these feelings, for example, this feeling of melancholy, where you can see him also as a child, and later indulging in this kind of feeling, where he actually enjoys it and just sits and daydreams, for example.
It's very much mm-hmm. that idea of the Ottoman, the end of the Ottoman Empire,
yes.
The end of empire. You get that atmosphere if you go to the harem at Topkapi, and you walk through, and you can almost sort of hear the echoes mm-hmm. of the people that used to live there, the women that used to live there.
Well, he's really fascinated, I think, by this idea that the past of Istanbul, in his mind, or perhaps in the mind of others, was this glorious, very brilliant past, whereas now it's a city which has been declined for 150 years, in his view. Obviously not everyone may agree with this, but this is the way he actually indulges in this feeling about the city, and that's partly the book is mainly held together by this particular vision, where the fate of the city is his own fate as well. And in part the book is a biography of him as a child, but it's also a kind of biography of the city itself, and obviously his relationship with that almost as one thing, because he himself is shaped by the city. This is the city. So there's the city of today, and there's also the other level of the city of the past, which exists underneath the contemporary city. Mm-hmm. Just like he is the writer today, and there is also this childhood lying underneath, sort of like two levels he's working with.
But you
both.
Don't get at the end of the book, you don't get in any sense an answer to the Turkish paradox of facing west and facing towards the Orient.
No, it's... I think he's just exploring it imaginatively. There's not necessarily seeking to answer it in a sort of, as a journalist might or historian might, but just exploring it imaginatively, what it means to be set between east and west, or sort of how the two have been amalgamated into something new and something original in this particular place and a spot in time as well. So it's just really, I think it's an exploration of these ideas rather than an attempt to, you know, map them out and come up with some kind of solution or anything like that.
There's a lovely description of his grandmother, who was obviously an important
yes,
figure.
Two grandmothers,
in
actually.
Yeah, two grandmothers, where he says she took on board the revolutionary ideas, the new ideas of Atatürk, and obviously told everybody what a wonderful idea it was, but somehow she in herself remained true to the old sort of Ottoman Empire sort of
yes
values.
And he tries to find this kind of if you like, contradiction, but certainly these two aspects, and he juxtaposes the old houses with the new houses constantly. He juxtaposes also old Turkish customs with newer westernized ways of life and so on. So there's this constant feeling that there is a new city, and underneath it there is always this older, different place, which is somehow in a way is still there, and at the same time is also being... well, it's basically either dying out or is simply changing.
One of the very sad visions that he talks about is when he describes people watching the big wooden houses that stood on the Bosphorus go up in flames.
Yes. Well, that's a kind of symbol of what we've just been saying. This first a decline and a fall into ruin, and then a complete removal of this the older city.
And how, in fact, people didn't seem at that time to be very bothered about it somehow. They sort of watch it from the boats on the Bosphorus, and it was sort
and also
of
the houses were, I think he describes them as impractical and so on, and of a different time.
Move
he
on.
Certainly dwells a lot on this tension that exists between the old and the new, and the east and west, and the old city and the new city, and so on. And it also comes out very much in the way that he dwells on these old paintings that we mentioned earlier, where he's actually looking to see where, you know, then he might find something which still exists or something which has been removed and so on. And he gains pleasure out of this kind of focus on these old pictures. But on the whole, he tries as well, I think, to... he mentions somewhere in the book specifically, I can't remember the exact words, where he says that he's not interested he almost feels, I think he shouldn't in any way try to exoticize or talk about the old place in sort of, you know, very colorful, nostalgic terms. But he actually paints this very bleak picture, or bleak in a way, as I say, because it's a feeling which is almost to be enjoyed, this kind of nostalgia. But he wants to paint the black and white city as it really is today, because whenever you describe this kind of rather more exotic past, or beautiful, sort of glorious past, you're always comparing, in a sense, to what there is around today. And he said that's for others to do, or for outsiders to do, to give that sort of exotic feel to everything. For him, it's every day. It's the way he really lives, and he doesn't sort of give it that kind of veneer, if you like.
I was speaking to a Turkish academic. I happened to meet him as I was reading the book some months ago. And I mentioned to him that I was reading the book. I said, as a matter of fact, I'm reading Orhan Pamuk's book. And the guy looked at me with a slightly sort of sneer expression on his face. And he told me, it's an exercise in navel gazing. And he obviously didn't appreciate it. He may not have appreciated it on a political level. I don't know what this guy's politics were. Of course, Orhan Pamuk has been linked to other controversies, the Armenian, his accusation about the Armenian, in his terms, massacre. He's had to leave the country because of those problems. He's now living, I think, in the US. He has felt those difficulties that Istanbul still continues to create, despite the fact that he's won the Nobel Prize for Literature, etc. Or perhaps because of the fact that he's won the Nobel Prize.
Yes, well, I don't know. The political side of his work is not something I've really looked into all that much. But he certainly is also interested, obviously, in a number of his books, partly in this, but also in particularly in some other books, like My Name is Red and so on, also is very interested in Turkish history in general, the Ottoman Empire and so on. So he talks a lot about this, and in a way he's obviously presenting his vision of the country, and I suppose not everyone presumably would subscribe to his view, because he's very interested in these topics. And about the navel gazing, well, he does, I mean, certainly in Istanbul, obviously it is an autobiography. So yes, it does describe a very personal, and also really it is about him as an individual, because earlier on you mentioned there is the family, and there is the family, but there are all these characters around him. I mean, really what is of interest is his own self-development and the way he responds to the city and continues to respond to the city. And it's really about him and the place and his very, very strong relationship with place. So yes, it is inward looking, but I think in an autobiography,
inevitably, it's going to be a bit inward-looking, but certainly he does give this magnificent picture of Istanbul that really made me want to go back there again.
Yes, definitely. It's a very rich text. As I say, he has a very visual imagination, so the descriptions are very, very rich. Every page, you know, has many images and so on, something you can really go back to.
Well, thank you very, very much, Petra,
for
coming to talk to us today about your approach to books, your life with books, and in particular about Orhan Pamuk's book, Istanbul, Memories of a City. Thank you so much. My guest today on Talking Books was Petra Bianchi. Do join me again next week when I shall be speaking to Polly March. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.